الک جاوید حسین ولد عنایت اللہ سیدہ رزینہ خاتون بنت کاظم ناظم حسین. پلیز ریسائٹ فاتحہ فور اس. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آلہ الطیبین الطاہرین المعصومین. امام حسین undertook a great journey and a great responsibility. امام حسین undertook a great responsibility and fulfilled it. And the message that he has given and the deen that he has shown and the Islam that he has described has its unique points that is different and is distinct from any other description shown to mankind. There's a sentence we find in riwayat, in hadith, where Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam where he says that ana ayatullah al-kubra, I am the great sign of Allah, wa ana quranun natik, that I am the spoken Quran. When Imam said this, so obviously ayat means that it is a sign towards Allah. It is like a sign we see on the highway for an exit. The sign can be small or the sign can be big. The bigger it is, the easier it is to recognize and follow it. So, Imam says that I am the biggest sign of Allah, meaning I am the biggest sign towards Allah. And this is for all of Ahlul Bayt, that they are the most biggest sign that you can find, the greatest sign you can find towards Allah. But amongst Ahlul Bayt also, when we see and we look at Imam Hussein, we will see that there are three things that make Imam Hussein's message distinct from any of the Imams. What he showed in Karbala, the message of Islam that he gave in Karbala is distinct from all the other Imams in three ways. The first thing is the clarity of the message. Imam Hussein, the clarity that he had shown what Islam is in Karbala, in no other time was that seen in any of the Imam's time. The clarity by which Islam was shown in Karbala is distinct from any other of the Imams. Second thing that makes Imam Hussein's message very distinct is the fact that Imam Hussein's message was attractive and appealing. The message that was given in Karbala is appealing. It attracts a person. It attracts human beings. It has that natural attraction that pulls people towards him. This is second thing. The third thing regarding Karbala and Imam Hussein's message in Karbala is the fact that It is the most effective message that was given for Islam. How Islam was shown in Karbala was the most effective way. That anyone who goes towards Karbala, meaning towards what Imam Hussein had done, it would affect his life and change it. So when you look at this, you will see that the way Imam Hussein had described deen and the way Imam Hussein had portrayed Islam, no one else had portrayed it that way. So in other words, if someone wants to learn Islam, then the easiest way and the best way and the most clear way of learning Islam is Karbala. In other words, I can say that if you do not learn Islam in Karbala, if you don't learn Islam from Imam Hussein, you cannot learn it from any other Imam. That is the summary of what I'm saying right now. If you don't learn it from Imam Hussein, you cannot learn it from anyone else. Meaning, because his message is the clearest. His message is the most obvious. If someone comes to Karbala and says, well, I haven't learned Islam here, then it means that he cannot go to any other Imam or any other place and learn Islam. It is in Karbala that you learn Islam. In Karbala, Imam Hussein gave the message of Islam. Now, my question is this. Imam Hussein gave Islam and in Karbala, and I'm talking about in Karbala, not before Karbala. In Karbala, the message that Imam Hussein gave. My question is this. Imam Hussein gave the message of Islam. Did Imam Hussein give the whole Islam to the people or did he give some of Islam to the people? In Karbala. Did Imam Hussein describe all of Islam in Karbala or did he describe a partial Islam in Karbala? Is it all? That he gave the whole Islam in Karbala or no? He only gave a bit of it. He said, no, I'm going to teach you these two, three lessons. The rest you learn somewhere else. Right? When we see that Imam Hussein had that opportunity that he could give the clearest message of Islam, then the message that was given, is it complete or is it incomplete? In other words, let me rephrase the question so we understand it better. Did Imam Hussein show us how to die as a Muslim or did he also show us how to live as a Muslim? You see, did he only teach us how to give shahadat and martyrdom or did he also teach us how to live and how to lead our lives and the principles by which we need to lead our lives? Is that a message that he also gave in Karbala or not? You know, again, we need to understand this because the thing is that many people, for them to learn the message of Shahadat in Karbala is very easy. It is obvious, it is clear. For everyone to learn the message of how to die for Allah's sake in Karbala is very easy because that is clear and obvious. But who has learned how to live the life that Allah wants in Karbala? My friends, when the enemies look at the Shia, when the enemies look at us, they know that, you know, these people have learned the lesson of Shahadat. They know how to die. They know how to give their lives for Allah. Because this has become the psyche of Shias. It's ingrained in our veins now. What Imam Hussein did and this and that. Obviously ingrained in our veins. So the issue is that if this is ingrained in our veins and if we see that this is a part of our lives and psyche, they know that also. So the enemies are looking at it and say, listen, the way to deal with these people is don't get them to a point where they have to give shahadat. Right? What the enemies are afraid of is not that you can give shahadat. They know you can give shahadat. They have seen it. They have experienced it. And they said, you know what? It's useless to fight with them or bring them to a war where they have to give shahadat, because they will give shahadat and they will give life to others also by giving shahadat. So the best way to deal with them is not to let them come to that point, destroy them, corrupt them before they reach there. Stop them from learning the lessons of life that Imam Hussein has taught them. Stop them from learning those lessons, the principles by which you lead your life. If they don't know that, then you know what? Don't even bring them to the level of shahadat, to that point. That's why they don't go to war with our countries, with our nations, right? They don't go to war. They don't want to go to war. They know that. You know what? If you go to war, these people are ready to die. They're ready to die. They know that. So what they do is that they will say that, listen, let's get them before they even reach that point. Corrupt them beforehand. Let them forget the message of Hussein in Karbala. What the enemy is afraid of is that if these Shias learn the lessons of life in Karbala, then it would be impossible to deal with them. This is what they're afraid of. So now, when we look at Imam Hussein in Karbala, is Imam Hussein only useful for revolutions and inqilab? That only at the time of revolutions we go to Imam Hussein and say that, yes, Ya Hussein, and you know, uprising, revolution? Or is he also useful in the time of peace when we have to organize ourselves and live as a society? Do you understand the question now, what I'm saying? My friends, this is very important, because the lessons of shahadat is easy in Karbala. We know that. It is clear. But the lessons of life are a little bit difficult. They need some thought, some effort to understand them. And that is, these 3 days, what I want to expound on is to see that what is the lessons of life, the principles by which we lead our life that Imam Hussein taught in Karbala. What is that principle by which a Shia is known? Right? That by this quality, that this virtue, that he would be known by it. This is what we want to understand from Imam, because Imam Hussein gave the complete Islam in Karbala. Really, Imam Hussein gave the whole of Islam. He didn't give partial. He didn't say that, I'll teach you how to die and you learn to live from someone else. In fact, we have like these misconception and misconceived sayings also that we adhere to without understanding what they mean. And then, you know, you look at this. In all of Islam, in all the events of Islam, Karbala has been emphasized in every occasion. Ziyarat of Imam Hussein has been emphasized in every occasion. On Eid, every Eid you see, read Ziyarat-e-Warisa, read Ziyarat-e-Warisa, read Ziyarat-e-Warisa. Everywhere you go, Ziyarat-e-Warisa. All the Imams are pointing to Karbala. All the Imams are doing this. To do what? So they say, listen, that is the clearest message we have given you. Take Islam from there. Take Islam from there. But what happened is that we marginalized Karbala into certain things and left the rest of the message. Some sayings, for example, that are misconceived or have, you know, make really no Islamic sense. For example, is like a saying that you hear all the time, live like Ali and die like Hussein. So what that means is that didn't Imam Hussein teach you how to live? You see, yes, Imam Ali taught us how to live. Of course, all the Imams taught us how to live. But the message that the A'imma, all Imam Ali and everyone want us to focus on is Karbala. Take the lessons from there, it's clear. It's better for you, it's easier understood by you. You know, if you want to go through Nahjul Balagha and try to understand Nahjul Balagha, what Imam Ali said, it might take a scholar to really actually understand the lessons, and maybe it will go into his heart and maybe it will become his character if he tries very hard. But if you go to Karbala, that same lesson that Imam Ali is teaching in Nahjul Balagha will just sink into you just by some tears that you show for Imam Hussein. It is that easy in Karbala. That's why Karbala was emphasized. It became that clear. So now, without much more introduction, I'll just go into the subject that I want to speak about, my friends. In our riwayat, we find a very interesting riwayat. You know, there's some riwayat, you know, that are just, you know, express and they, you know, come and they tell you and go on. But there's some riwayat that when you read them, there is, you know, a completeness, a wholeness that you get out of it. One of those riwayats. Let me just tell you about that, you know, this riwayat. Read it for you and go on from here. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. When Nabi Musa heard about the status and the fadilat of the last prophet and his ummah, so he was completely amazed. I mean, he couldn't believe it. You know, like you hear something that you can't believe, you say, I can't believe it. You know, how can that be? You know, for example, if I say, you know, that this man jumped 10 feet high, you say, I can't believe he can go that high. You know, it's hard for you to believe it, right? So now what happened is that when Hazrat Musa heard about the position and the rank of the Prophet and his ummah, he could not believe it. He couldn't believe it. So he asked Allah, he said, Allah, arani darajat Muhammad wa ummatihi. Allah, show me the darajat, the status and the ranking of Muhammad and his ummah. I want to see it. Now Musa used to speak to Allah, right? You speak to Allah. So he said that, I want to see their status, how high have they reached. Right? So Allah, you know, replies back to Musa. He says, Ya Musa, lam tutiq dhalik. Musa, you cannot handle it. You won't be able to bear it. You won't be able to comprehend it. Walakin urika manzilatan qalilatan azima. He says, but I will show you a small glimpse. Let me give you a small glimpse. You know, so you don't go away empty-handed. I will give you a small glimpse of a station, a manzilat that they have. Small glimpse, not the whole thing, just a small glimpse. So Allah says, He removed the veils of the heavens, whatever holds back from looking into the heavens, He removed those veils, and Musa looked, فَنَظَرَ, he looked at it, right? وَتَتْلُفُ نَفْسُهُ, and he says, وَقَادَتْ تَتْلُفُ نَفْسُهُ, he almost died by looking at it. By the light and the nearness to Allah. The light, the anwaraha, bi anwaraha, because the lights that were coming out of it, wa qurbaha ila Allah ta'ala. And it's near, and the, how close they were, he could not take, how can someone reach that high? He could not handle it. Just to interject here, my friends, if this was just about the Prophet, we could understand it. There is no one who can compare himself to the Prophet. We cannot even comprehend his maqam. But he is seeing the maqam not only of the Prophet, but his ummah also. He's looking at them also. How can they reach that high? And Allah, he tells him, right? For example, you know, he told him, فَضَّلْتُهُ عَلَيْكَ وَعَلَىٰ جَمِيعِ خَلْكِهِ, I have made them higher in rank than you and the rest of creation. In rank they are, in fadilat, I have made them more, have more fadilat than you and the rest of creation. Now Musa is looking at that status and that rank, and he is, you know, he can't handle it. He said, enough Allah, enough, I can't take it anymore. You know, that's it. He was about to be finished. You know, he couldn't handle it. It was so big. I mean, imagine that rank. Who is this? Who are these people? Those who are the followers of Ahlul Bayt. Right? He's looking at their status, and he, an Ulul Azm Prophet, is unable to handle that maqam that they have. That maqam that they have. So he looked at it, he says, obviously he is Ulul Azam prophet. It means that he is not a normal person. His intellectual ability is greater than others. He looked at it, the first logical question he has, he says, Bema ballaghta hadhil karama. Allah, how did they get this karamat? How did they reach this status? How did they do it? How did they get there? Understand this. Allah says, قَالَ اللَّهُ بِمَا خُلَكٍ اِخْتَسَسْتُهُ بِهِمْ مِنْ بَيْنِهِمْ. He says, because of a trait, one trait, an akhlaqi trait, khuluk means there's one akhlaqi trait that they have. One trait that they have. That is, I found specially in them, amongst themselves. They have this one trait that they portray in amongst themselves, and that one trait has made them reach that status that they have inside of them. What is that one akhlaqi trait? What would we give to know that? That there is one trait that they have that is special to them, and I've seen it in them. No other nation had this trait. They have it. No other nation has this trait. They have that akhlaqi trait. And because of that trait, that's why they have reached this rank. What is that trait? He says, وَهُوَ الْإِيثَار. He says, and this is إِيثَار. إِيثَار is that trait. Musa is looking at the status of the Shia. And he's looking at their rank. And he's saying, why? Allah is saying, because of إِيثَار. They do ithar amongst each other. My friends, this, looking at this hadith, when you look at this riwayat, how Allah gives this description, and how Allah makes us understand this quality, this virtue, that is amongst the ummah of the Prophet, the last ummah. The last ummah will have this trait in them. And this is what will make them special. And this trait that they will have, no other nation in the past has. He says, اِقْتَسَسْتُهُمْ. I found specially in them. Only in them I found this trait, this ithar. So this is what we want to learn. And from here, I will take you to other places in Karbala. But ithar, my friends, this is what we want to learn. Let's send a loud salawats. You know, some speakers, you know, when they want to break, they ask for salawat. Some people, you know, because they can't remember what they're saying, they say send a salawat. But the fact is, you know, when you want to learn the teachings of Ahlul Bayt, you require tawfiq to understand it, for it to become a part of your life. That's why when we send this salawat, maybe through this salawat we'll get that tawfiq and that noor to understand the teachings of Ahlul Bayt and help it to become a part of our life. My friend, ithar. Ithar is a quality, it's a virtue. Ithar means to sacrifice. Ithar means to sacrifice. Sacrifice what you have for someone else. Meaning sacrificing what you have for someone else is called ithar. Ithar, meaning self-sacrifice, altruism, is a quality a person has where he is sacrificing what he has for someone else. But that someone else cannot be Allah. That someone else cannot be Allah. Because you cannot do ithar to Allah. You can't sacrifice for Allah. Why? Because whatever you have is from Him. So when you give it back, you are returning to Him. You're not sacrificing it for Him. Right? There was a time when in the early days of the Islamic Revolution, there was many attacks on ulama. And many ulama were killed by the attacks of terrorists. And in one such attack, 72 people were killed in the cabinet. And amongst them was Ayatollah Beheshti, Ayatollah Bahonar, and these people. And when this happened, you know, the Ahle Minbar, the people who go on the minbar and speak, they started to say that, you know, this is the isar we have given for Allah. This is the isar we have given for Allah, you know. And they started saying that. Imam Khomeini caught hold of that. He caught hold of that. He said, what nonsense are you talking of? He said, we have done this isar, 72 we have given. He said, you haven't done isar to Allah. You have just given Him what He has given you. See, isar is not for Allah. You don't apply it for Allah. It doesn't apply to Allah. It applies to someone other than Allah. And friends, this is isar. Isar, you want to see an example in history, is when the Prophet was looking for someone to sleep in his bed. When he wanted someone to sleep in his bed, so he called Amir al-Mu'mineen and he said, Ali, I need you to sleep in the bed. You know this. Imam Ali asked him just one question. He says, will you be saved by this? So what was Imam Ali doing? He was making sure that I'm doing this for you. Right? I'm giving up my life for you. You see this? So now what happened is that Imam Ali is trying to make sure that this is ithar that I'm doing. I am giving I have in my life, I'm giving up for you. Now this is, you see, ithar is different than jihad. Ithar is different than jihad. Jihad is something else, my friend. Ithar is something else. Really. This is the reason why the Prophet gave chance to others to do jihad. Look at it. He gave chance to others to do jihad. Look in Khandaq. Amr ibn Abdawud challenged Muslims, he gave a chance. Ali, sit down, you know, let them have a chance. Let them do it. He even asked them for it, right? He said, is there anyone who would take this guy on? Right? He asked them for it. Right? And, you know, no one wanted it, then he had to let Ali go, all right? In Khaybar also, he gave the flag. He said, go, do your best. Now, it's another thing, their best wasn't enough. Right? So, they tried, they didn't do it, Ali had to go, that's fine. But he gave others a chance. In the night of Hijrat, he didn't even ask anyone else. He didn't even ask anyone else. Because what he was asking for on the night of Hijrat was harder than Khandaq and Khaybar. It was harder than Khandaq and Khaybar, any of these things. Why? Because he needed someone who could sleep. You see, he needs someone who could sleep. You see, my friend, being awake is very easy. But to sleep the way that he wanted someone to sleep there, right? That required for you to have the ability to do ithar. This is ithar, my friends. Imam Ali gave himself up for Rasulullah. He said, I want to give myself up for you. You, as long as you can live. This is ithar, my friends. This is where ithar comes in. And that's why in the same hadith we have, you know, just to give a note on that, that when Allah, He made Jibreel and Mikhail brothers, right? Because they had read Aqd-e Ukhuwwat, they became brothers of each other. He asked them the question. He says, if you had a choice between your life and your brother's life, would you choose your life or would you choose your brother's life? Right? Now, the angels, right? I mean, not to be hard on them, they are aql-e mahz. You know, the only thing from aql, that's it. Right? So, it's like logical thinking, it's computing. One plus one is two. So, both of them chose their own life. Both of them chose their own life. They say, you know, of course, our life. You know, that makes sense. Right? What makes sense is what aql says. Finish. That's how they think. So they chose their own life. So now what happened is that Allah, then He told them that now I want you to learn from this brother who is giving himself up for his other brother. And He showed Imam Ali sleeping in the bed of the Prophet. You see that? Why is this? Because of the fact that, you know, he's giving himself for them, not me. Understand that? Yes, it is done for Allah's sake, but I'm giving myself up for someone else. And I'll explain, my friends, that, you know, it's easier to give yourself up for Allah than to give yourself up for someone else. Later on, inshallah, I'll explain the next 2 days. Why is that? But, my friends, understand this. Ithar means to give yourself up for someone else. Imam Ali showed that on the night of Hijrat. How to do Ithar. The secret of Karbala is Ithar. The secret of Karbala is Ithar. It is not jihad, it is not shahadat. Why? My friends, if you say that it's shahadat, then we have shahadat in Badr, we have shaheed in Uhud. Badr, you have shaheed. In Uhud, you have shaheed. You have Hazrat Hamza, who was Sayyid al-Shuhada before Imam Hussein. There's no doubt about his sincerity and his ikhlas and his deen and his iman. He became shaheed in Uhud. But what makes Karbala unique? If it's just shahadat, then shahadat is also found in other places. But they didn't become Karbala. What made Karbala special was that the people in Karbala not only gave shahadat, but they did ithar. Understand this. They did ithar, my friends. They did ithar. I'll give an example and inshallah we will end for today. Right? On the night of Ashura, Imam Hussein gathered his companions. He gathered his companions, he asked them to come, he said, come here. And he let the reality be known to them. He said, listen, these people want to kill me. Right? They want to kill me. They have nothing against you. Don't waste your life. Don't die here. You can go. You can go. Let them come and be here. Imam Hussein is asking them to go. Now, they didn't leave. They did not leave. Right? They stood their ground. Then, okay, there are certain reasons why they didn't leave. Let's go through those reasons Imam Hussein did. Imam Hussein went to some reasons. He said, okay, let's see, why aren't you leaving here? Imam of your time is telling you to leave. Why aren't you listening to me? You're disobeying me. Why aren't you leaving? Right? So there must be a reason why you're staying here. There's something that you want, something that you require, something that is there. Let me see what that reason is. I want to tell you that reason. He says, maybe you feel obligated. You feel obligated. Listen, this is jihad. Imam has said this. I have to do jihad. I have to defend my imam because of the fact that I gave bay'at to him. Imam Hussein said, I'll take my bay'at away. I will take my bay'at away. Now I took my allegiance away. You have no obligation towards me now. Now you have no obligation towards me. Now you can go. Leave. Do you see that? Now you have no obligation. So now, by taking bay'at away from them, the issue of jihad goes out the window. This is not jihad anymore. I'm not saying this. It's over. The obligation of jihad is only when the imam tells you. Imam says, this is jihad time. Come here and fight. You have to fight. But by taking bay'at away, he took the issue of jihad away from them. Now it's not jihad for you anymore to stay here. Right? It's over. Now jihad is out the door. They say, what? Why? Now why aren't you going? Why aren't you leaving now? I said, maybe you might be afraid that, you know, if we leave here, then maybe we might not go to Jannat. He says, if greed of Jannat is there, all right, here, you know what? I will show you your places in Jannat. I'll show you your places in Jannat here. You know, here you go, places in Jannat. He showed everyone their places in Jannat. He says, now you see that? You don't need to die to go to that place. You don't need to die tomorrow to go to that place. Really, you don't need to die. You can leave right now and still get there. Okay? I mean, you know, hey, I can live my life here and enjoy it and also go there and enjoy myself. خَيْرُ الدُّنْيَا وَخَيْرُ الْآخِرَةِ He's giving them that choice. He said, take it. You don't need to stay here. Go. You know what? They didn't go. So that was out the that's out the door. Now, sometimes what happens is that this, right? You come to a place where you don't want to be. But because you're already here, you feel awkward to leave when you're stuck. Right? I mean, you came to the wrong majlis and you're like, you know, I can't leave. Everyone's over here, you know, I can't just stand up and walk away. So you feel like, you know, hey, you know, I just can't walk away like that. Maybe you feel like haya. That haya, that shame, that, you know what, if I get up now, people will say, why is he getting up? Right? You feel awkward, right? And haya is a very strong force. Ghairat is a very strong force. It, you know, I mean, when nothing works, you see haya works. You know, when nothing works, haya works. You see, the way that haya can make a person do something, you see, many other things cannot make them do like that. Really. Greed makes you do things, but only to an extent. When you see fear, you run away. You let the greed go. Right? If you have a choice between money and life, you know, you let go of your money and run. Right? That's what you do. Right? So greed will only take you to that extent. Fear will also make you go a little bit more. When you're afraid of something, you might go a little bit more. Right? Meaning, for example, if I threaten you to do something, right? Maybe, you know, because of that fear, you will do it, but only to an extent. Right? If all the motivations that are there, that you can think of, you see, the motivation of haya is very strong. Is a very strong force. You know, maybe you don't do anything out of fear, maybe you don't do anything out of greed, maybe you don't do anything out of any other motivation, but if someone, you know, in all these situations you can maintain your sabr. But if someone says something to your wife, or your sister, or your mother, you see, even the persons who have no deen, their haya will come in place. Their haya will come in place. That's why it requires more strength to maintain sabr when your haya is shaken. Imam Ali's strength and greatness of power was not known in Khaybar. It was known when he didn't do when Fatima was being oppressed. That's where you can understand who Imam Ali was. No other person could have taken it. This is haya. So haya is a very strong force. Imam Hussein understands this. Maybe it's haya that is stopping you. He says, I'll put these lights out for you and you go. Go. I'll put these lights out for you. You go now. Leave me. They didn't go, my friends. They didn't go. Imam Hussein, then he made another thing clear. He said, listen, if you think by being here that you can save my life or you can protect the haram of Rasulullah, then let me tell you, tomorrow I will be killed and the haram of Rasulullah will be plundered. They will be plundered. If you stay here or not, it makes no difference. So you don't have to give up your life to save my life because you cannot. You don't have to be here to save the haram of Rasulullah because you cannot. Because tomorrow these people will be in these tents. And they still didn't go. So now why did they stay there? My question is, why did these companions not leave? Imam is telling them to leave. Why are they not leaving? In other words, if I can say it in my words, what Imam Hussein is telling them. He's saying, listen, by you staying here, you cannot save my life. By staying here, you cannot help the woman here. They will become prisoners tomorrow. And I will be killed tomorrow. In other words, the only reason you're staying, if you die tomorrow, the only reason you're dying, in other words, the only reason you're dying is to give me a few more moments to live. That is what your life is worth tomorrow. Your life is worth what? So that Hussein can live for a few more minutes. That's what your life is worth. That's what you're giving your life for tomorrow. This is Isar. See, what they did in Karbala was Isar. We want you to go and live for a few more minutes. That's it. If my life is worth your few more minutes, that's enough for me. I'll give it up. I'll give up my life. Friends, Karbala is made special through this Isar. This is that Isar. When it comes to doing Isar for Imam Hussein, it's easy. I understand that. And maybe inshallah we will talk more about that. When it comes to doing it, really Imam Hussein, who wouldn't do Ithar for him? Because, you know, anyone who gives anything to Hussein not only returns it, but he returns it in such a way that you will be ashamed. That is Imam Hussein. That is the generosity of Hussein. There's no way besides. Imam Hussein will give you in such a way that, you know, really we are embarrassed. You know, we who have been so flawed in even mourning for Imam Hussein, when we see what Hussein will give us in the hereafter, then we'll be ashamed and say, Hussein, all of this for what we have done nothing. Put to shame. Imam Hussein is like that. Any dealing with Hussein is like that. You know, it's always a one-sided dealing. He always does that. Really, anyone who you want to see, you know, you will see any time you deal with Imam Hussein, he will put you in that situation where you feel embarrassed. Hussein, you did so much for me. You know? Really, that's the way it is. There's one time that, you know, it is said that when Hur, he came and blocked Imam Hussein's path, and when they reached Imam Hussein, they were thirsty, and they were dying of thirst, they were in a very bad situation. So Imam Hussein ordered Abbas to give water to the soldiers. And Abbas went and arranged for water, and they were drinking. And one of the soldiers says, in Hur's army, one of the soldiers in his army says, I was so thirsty, I went forward to drink water, and in my haste, before the water could reach my mouth, I dropped it. Because I was so hasty to drink water, I dropped it. And I saw that Hussein was sitting and watching me, and he himself came forward. He himself came forward and said, give me your cup. He gave the cup, filled the water, and says, now you drink. I will hold it for you. You drink from my hand. This is how Imam Hussein is. When you deal with Imam Hussein, truly, when you deal with Imam Hussein, you feel like Hussein. You have to be indebted to him. That's the way Hussein is. You know, there was a Turkish slave, who was a slave of one of the companions of Imam Hussein. One of the companions, he had a slave, a Turkish slave, and he was worthless. He was no one. He was nobody. He was in the camp. He was nobody. No one would talk to him. He would just do the work, bring the water, do this, do that, you know, working for someone. He himself is saying, I mean, who am I? I'm nothing. I'm nobody, you know. I mean, these are all big people. Habib ibn Mazah, Muslim ibn al-Sajjad. They are characters. They are great personalities. And here I am. I'm a nobody. But he loved Imam Hussein. He said, I love this person. I love this person, you know. You know, if I have to give my life today for him, I will do it. You know, and he saw everyone giving their lives. And every time they will give their lives, they'll say, Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. And you know, and he said, you know, I mean, he had that, but he wouldn't talk to anyone. He went and he was fighting in the battle. In Ashura, he was fighting on Ashura in the battle of Karbala. And one side of the battlefield, he was fighting until he was injured. Until he was injured and he fell down. And he felt ashamed to call Imam Hussein because he said, Imam Hussein will come for me, he'll waste his time. I'm a nobody. I'm a nobody. So silently he said, Assalamu alaikum, ya Abdullah. He fell unconscious. He fell unconscious, and then after a while he felt a shade on his face. He opened his eyes. He saw Imam Hussein. Put his cheek on his cheek. He said, Mawla, I'm a nobody. I was thinking no one would come to even look at me. I'm just a slave here. Why have you taken the burden to come and tend to me? He said, you call me, I'm indebted to you. I must pay off my debts. Hussein came to even console and comfort that Turkish slave who died for him. Hussein, we are here in this small little part of the world who are crying for you. Come to us like that Turkish slave called you, we call you. Come and put the shade of your mercy on our face. Hussein. My friends, Hussein cannot remain indebted to anyone. He cannot remain indebted. That's why anything you do for Hussein, he will do for you more than anyone else. No one can say that Hussein owes them anything. Hussein does not remain indebted to anyone. But if there's one person Hussein owes, and if there's one person that Hussein is indebted to, it is Zainab al-Kubra. When it came to Zainab, Hussein said, my sister, how many favors of yours are on my shoulder that I cannot repay you? How many things you have done for me that I cannot give you back, Zainab? Zainab, if there is of the whole world, this whole universe, no one do I owe anything to. But if Zainab, if there's only one person who I owe to is you, Zainab. سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون يا محمود بحق محمد يا الله بحق علي يا فاطر السماوات بحق فاطمة محسن بحق حسن يا قديم الأحسان بحق حسن Allah give us the tawfiq to be on the right path. Give us the wisdom to understand your guidance. Hasten the appearance of our Imam. Make us his helper when he comes. وآخر دعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين. ما تمه حسين.